This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. In the days following the explosive revelations by the Washington Post that Donald Trump revealed sensitive information to Russian diplomats, talk of impeaching the 45th president has grown. The Post revealed that Trump had shared classified information about the Islamic State to Russian officials Sergei Lavrov and Sergei Kislyak last week at a meeting in the White House. Trump has confirmed that he shared information but defended his right to do so. Russian President Vladimir Putin has now offered to share a full transcript of the conversations with Congress. And that's not all. Newly fired FBI Director James Comey has revealed in a memo that Trump had asked him to end the agency's investigation into former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. The assertion is being interpreted as possible obstruction of justice on Trump's part. Meanwhile, a new poll has found that 48% of Americans now support impeaching Trump. That's the highest percentage so far during the president's short tenure. My guest is Ron Fine. He is the legal director of Free Speech for People. Welcome to the program, Ron.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So are there sort of multiple legal reasons or justifications that are popping up right now, any one of which or maybe all taken together could provide the impetus for impeaching Trump or starting impeachment proceedings, I should say?
Absolutely. And in fact, the initial grounds for opening an impeachment investigation were ready on the day of his inauguration. And that's why Free Speech for People, along with a partner organization, Roots Action, launched the ImpeachDonaldTrumpNow.org site on Inauguration Day. And the grounds for impeachment that have been in place since the moment he took the oath of office are his violations of the Constitution's Foreign Emoluments Clause and Domestic Emoluments Clause. Those are clauses that relate to accepting payments from governments, which the president is forbidden from doing.
And in fact, there was a recent art installation by an artist who projected the words "Pay your Trump bribes" here onto the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C., and I believe also projected the text of the Emoluments Clause onto the side of that building. And certainly now Trump has said that he is going to simply donate any proceedings, any profits or proceeds from the stays that diplomats, foreign diplomats might have at his hotel. Has he provided any documentation? Would that be enough to protect him from the Emoluments Clause?
No, it wouldn't. And while the hotel probably provides the most visible and easily reported example of his accepting of foreign government payments, it's not the only one. And we don't even know the full range of it because much of his business takes place in foreign countries where foreign government payments may be coming to him. But what we do know is that besides the hotel in D.C., we know that he has tenants in Trump Tower that are foreign government-owned banks from a Bank of China. We know he owes money. He has lines of credit to foreign government-owned banks. We know that his business partner for Trump Tower Manila is a special envoy of the Philippine government, and many other examples besides the hotel in D.C., which is, of course, the most famous one, that he is receiving foreign government money from all types of sources.
Now, wouldn't Trump's tax returns be of great use to help see what he owes, who he owes money to, et cetera? And of course, we now know that Trump is not going to be releasing any tax returns until after he's finished being president, at which point it would be a moot anyway, right?
Yeah, I mean, we don't know at this point what is in those tax returns, but there's a good reason to think that there might be something extremely damaging when you think of how far he's gone to avoid disclosing them, which has, of course, been a tradition of every president since Richard Nixon. And he has worked very hard to avoid disclosing them. So there's something deeply concerning in those tax returns, and it might indicate money coming in from foreign sources, whether governmental or not, that are highly disturbing from the perspective of him being the president of the United States.
Now, there are other aspects that his tax returns could show, which lead into some of the latest news, which is that has Trump, for his businesses, borrowed money from Russian oligarchs to fund, you know, his golf courses, et cetera. There have been reports by journalists who say that the Trumps have admitted it. One reporter who said that in a conversation with Eric Trump, when asked where they got the funding for a golf course right after the recession, he said, oh, we've got plenty of money, and it's coming from these major Russian funders. And this is separate from Putin and the Russian government. We're talking about Russian businessmen, some say members of the Russian mafia. Oligarchs is another word being used to describe them. Wouldn't the tax returns of Trump possibly reveal some of those connections too?
It well might. And we're learning more and more thanks to investigative reporting. And just today, a report came out that Trump's project in Toronto, which became so politically unpopular there that they actually asked to have the name Trump removed from it, was funded heavily by Russian oligarchs. But what I think is also important to note is that in some countries, there's not as clear a line between businessmen and the government as we had hoped to have here in the United States. And so when you hear that, well, it's just a private industrialist, it's not an official government sovereign wealth fund or an official government bank, that's not always such a clear line in foreign countries that have less strict rules about corruption than we have had in the United States until Trump.
So what do you make of these revelations by the Washington Post that the president, his staff scrambled to try to suppress or to do damage control on, that he shared intelligence about the Islamic State with Russian diplomats just last week in the White House? Incidentally, that meeting itself became controversial because American media weren't allowed to be present, but Russian media were there, and the Russian media took photos of those meetings and just published them on social media. That became a controversy in and of itself. Now we find out at those meetings, for which we have some good photographic evidence, that intelligence about the Islamic State was shared. Trump's staff scrambled to do damage control, but Trump then himself simply tweeted that he had the right to do it. And I believe legally he does, at least according to media, he does have the right to, because it's the president who gets to set the classification level of intelligence, right?
Yes and no. So this meeting is an interesting one because, as you pointed out, if it weren't for Russian media, we wouldn't even know that the Russian ambassador was inside the Oval Office. And so we know very little about what actually was said and what happened. But what we understand from the reporting is that he gave information. We now know Israel had a spy implanted within the Islamic State. That information is now burned. Now, it is true that as a general matter, the President of the United States has the legal authority to declassify information, and he can do that at his discretion if he determines it's in the national security interests of the United States. I don't actually think that's what happened. I think Trump was trying to brag to the ambassador, much as he tried to brag to Billy Bush, and it got him into trouble. But even if it doesn't violate statutes or regulations about classified information, Trump is bound by an oath of office to take care to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. And if he is recklessly disclosing classified information that one of our allies asked us not to disclose to anyone else, and doing it for no conceivable national security reason, I think he's violating his oath of office.
And apparently it was a spur of the moment decision. And this is how Trump explained it on Twitter. He said, as president, I wanted to share with Russia, in brackets, at an openly scheduled White House meeting, which I have the absolute right to do, facts pertaining to terrorism and airline flight safety, humanitarian reasons, plus I want Russia to greatly step up their fight against ISIS and terrorism. This was basic. And then he also added, I've been asking Director Comey and others from the beginning of my administration to find the leakers in the intelligence community. Not sure what his assertion about leakers in the intelligence community had to do with his leaking of intelligence to Russian diplomats. But then there's also the Comey memo saying that he, which is a separate issue, saying that he was asked by Trump to end the investigation on Michael Flynn. We'll get to the Flynn story in a moment. So staying on Trump's justification of why he shared this information with Russia, it's also highly unusual for a sitting president to just take to Twitter and spill his guts in this way, right?
Absolutely. And I think it provides a window into his psychology that other countries, allied or unfriendly, would have given millions of dollars to do in previous eras to understand the thinking of the president in real time. Now, I want to be clear that not everything that we're talking about with Trump is necessarily grounds for impeachment. Some of it is just a grave embarrassment to our country and puts our national security at risk. But enough of what he's doing is grounds for impeachment that we've called for the impeachment investigation.
So let's talk about the Comey memo. Newly fired, first of all, it's quite unusual for a sitting president to fire an FBI director. There's meant to be an independence between the FBI and the White House, which is why the FBI director usually will stay on in his or her position after a president takes on their tenure. So Trump fired Comey, and now we find out, and Comey seems to have covered his behind quite well in documenting everything he was doing. In the Senate, I don't think expected Comey to drop his bombshell, which is that the president asked for an end to an investigation of Michael Flynn. What is the problem with that aspect of it? Why would it be a problem for a president to ask an FBI director to drop an investigation on one of his former employees?
Well, it could constitute obstruction of justice, and this obstruction of justice is actually the first new ground that we've added to our impeachment call since we launched on Inauguration Day, at that time focusing on the Emoluments Clause issues. And the reason is that both under federal statutory law and also under the precedents we have of previous impeachments, the articles of impeachment against both President Richard Nixon and President Bill Clinton prominently featured obstruction of justice, because the president is in a unique position to order to shut down criminal investigations by the FBI. And even in the case of Nixon, he didn't actually tell the FBI director to do it. He sent a message through a third party. So when Trump tells the FBI director, if that is in fact the case, and I think we'll be hearing from Director Comey soon, tells him to shut down an investigation into one of Trump's own associates, General Flynn, it does definitely raise the specter of obstruction of justice.
So Comey documented his meeting with Trump the day after that happened. And in the memo, he detailed that Trump told Comey, I hope you can let this go, this meaning the investigation of Flynn. And of course, that has to do with any connections or meetings, improper meetings that Flynn might have had with the Russians before Trump took office. So at the same time that a lot of people are talking about impeachment, there is, I keep seeing in the media these sort of, cold water being splashed on any fantasies that Americans might have of impeachment, that it's actually very hard to do so. There is no clear and straightforward way to impeach this president based on what there is so far. What do you make of those concerns?
Well, when people say that impeachment of a president is hard, they're right. But it's a process that has been done before, and we are living in unprecedented times. And I think what will happen is that as these revelations continue to unfold, as we learn more and more about the obstruction of justice issue with Director Comey, as we continue to learn more and more about President Trump's foreign entanglements and dependencies on foreign governments, whether it's Turkey or Russia or any other, what will happen is there will be a tipping point. And I actually think we're entering that tipping point right now with the Comey revelations, where members of Congress, both Republicans and Democrats, will say this is enough. And in fact, on Wednesday morning, Representative Al Green of Texas spoke on the House floor and for the first time formally said that he supported impeaching the president. And we're hearing statements from other representatives, again, both Democrats and Republicans, indicating that they are ready to take those steps soon.
Right. I mean, John McCain, even Senator John McCain, a very highly regarded Republican senator who has clashed with Trump, of course, said that this scandal is becoming as big as Watergate, you know, invoking the Nixon Watergate proceedings. And that's pretty serious. Justin Amash, another Republican congressman, also said that he would, this is something that he is interested in looking at. And because the authority for beginning impeachment proceedings lies with Congress, isn't congressional support the most important thing needed for impeachment proceedings?
Ultimately, the resolution of impeachment does need to come from the House of Representatives. And the way that we are building support for that is at the grassroots level. So at the ImpeachDonaldTrumpNow.org website, which now crossed a million signers, we are organized by congressional district. And we have been also working on local resolutions of cities and towns across the country, passing resolutions, calling on the House to initiate impeachment proceedings. And again, this is building grassroots pressure on the House. It will have to be both Democrats and Republicans coming together, putting country before party, to say that this president has gone too far in not only violating the Constitution, but putting us all at risk.
Trump, in a speech on Wednesday to the Coast Guard Academy, said no politician in history has been treated worse or more unfairly. Some are seeing that signal as a signal of him putting up a big fight. You know, you mentioned Nixon resigned, and you know, most presidents who we expect to kind of follow a relatively rational, you know, path in their presidency, facing such allegations, might eventually resign. It doesn't seem like Trump is the resigning type, though.
It's hard to tell, because he has also said that he doesn't really enjoy this job. And he said in an interview that he liked his old life, and he thought this would be easier, believe it or not. He thought being president would be easier than just running the Trump Organization. And in fact, it's not easier, as he's learned. And I think he may reach a point where he decides, I don't need this. I could be playing golf 7 days a week and, you know, making speeches at buildings and cutting ribbons and not having to deal with Congress and the media. And
however, of course, the humiliation of impeachment might be more than his ego could bear.
He may look for a dignified way out. He may be interested in some option where he resigns citing medical reasons or something else. But I think that when the pressure begins to build on him, he will seriously consider if he can find some way to quit the job while making it seem as if he's not giving up. You know, we saw Governor Sarah Palin of Alaska quit her job when it got difficult for her. And I wouldn't put it past Trump to quit and take on a TV series.
Now, there are reports, by the way, that outside the country, there are betting websites that are betting on Trump's impeachment. Even more important than that is a poll that I mentioned, a new poll that was conducted in the wake of Comey being fired. So I believe before the Washington Post revelations about intelligence sharing with Russian diplomats, the poll found that 48% of Americans now support impeaching the president. This is the largest the largest percentage that we've seen so far. And it's 41% are opposed to the idea. Only 43% of voters feel that Trump will serve his full term as president. More, 45% think he won't. How important is public opinion on the issue of impeachment?
I think it's hugely important. And the national polls are important. It's also important to have support in every congressional district. So it will be important for people that care about this to not just look at national polls and betting markets in London, but to get engaged with their member of the House of Representatives, calling him or her on the phone, going to town halls and asking, are you in support of impeaching the president? And if not, why not? And it will also be important for people, again, to work at the local level. Sometimes these city council resolutions, although they seem to some to be merely symbolic, can signify support to a member of Congress who's on the fence, and to see that the public in their district is in support of impeachment, whether or not the member was planning to do it or not, can help tip them over.
Now, there are also marches being planned across the country on July 2nd, impeachment rallies across the country, and people are calling it the Not My President's Day instead of President's Day. Assuming Trump remains president until July 2nd, could that also give Congress the impetus that they need, the pressure that they need from below to show that there is widespread support? And do you expect those rallies to be well attended?
I think that all of the rallies that we have seen since the moment of inauguration, starting with the Women's March, including the Tax March, the upcoming March for Truth, all of these rallies help to keep people active and organized and help to show that there is opposition to this president and how he is abusing his political power. But it's important also not to leave it at the rally, not for people to simply show up and say that I showed up at a demonstration and therefore I've done what I need to do. They need to take that energy, get the information that they learn at these events, and bring it back to their member of Congress.
Let's finally also wrap up our discussion of how impeachment would actually work. It has to be initiated by the House, but doesn't the Senate also need to weigh in? And at the Senate, you need a supermajority, I understand, to confirm impeachment, 67 votes?
That's right. So the House would need to vote to impeach by a majority vote. And then the Senate, in order to convict, would require a two-thirds vote, 67 out of the 100 senators. Now, as people point out, in the case of a president, that's never happened before. Certainly federal judges have been convicted of impeachment charges. But President Nixon, as you mentioned, resigned before he got that far. So I think that the chance of the Senate convicting as these charges increase is actually quite reasonable. This is an extraordinary set of scandals that President Trump is getting himself into, and I think his support is going to evaporate.
So they would need, 17, 18 Republican senators to cross over the aisle to vote along with Democrats, assuming all Democrats confirm impeachment for that to happen. That's a pretty high bar. I mean, we may have someone like McCain on the side of the Democrats on this one, but it remains to be seen if enough Republican senators come through. What do you make of how Paul Ryan is reacting, House Speaker? What do you make of Senator Mitch McConnell? There might be people like McCain and Amash that are saying impeachment, saying that I word, but in terms of the Republican leaders that matter, House Speaker and Senate Majority Leader, are they suggesting that their faith in Trump is in any way wavering?
I think whether you're looking at the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, that the leadership in the House and the Senate is waiting for the political temperature to get to the right number. And when they feel that the problems have gotten so bad that they can't ignore it anymore, when they conclude that it's in their interests to support impeachment, they will. I don't think it's a principled opposition to impeaching the president, nor a deep abiding love for President Trump that is keeping the Republican leadership from turning on him right now. I think they're watching poll numbers, not national poll numbers necessarily, but poll numbers in their districts. And what's important is that this is a nonpartisan effort and that it shouldn't be painted as a Democratic effort, let alone any other type of partisan effort. So we need to emphasize that this is not about party, but that this is about the president and the Constitution and our country's principles.
Well, despite that, of course, because of Trump's attacks on so many issues that are dear to progressives, it does become a really important issue for progressives. If you care about immigrant rights, if you care about, you know, the rights of people of color, if you care about women's rights, the Trump presidency has been disastrous. So a lot of people point out, why are you backing impeachment if you care about social justice? Because a president, Mike Pence, the vice president, would automatically become president if Trump was impeached or stepped down. A president, Mike Pence, would be able to carry out all of these heinous policies with much more order and predictability than Trump is. What do you make of that?
Well, first of all, I don't want to rule out the possibility that the vice president might also be subject to impeachment. It's very early in this process, but the reporting about the firing of Director Comey indicated that Pence was deeply involved in the planning, and he also led the Trump transition team and was aware of issues involving General Flynn and his Russia contact. So let's not necessarily assume that Vice President Pence is not going to be impeached either at some point. But to your larger question, I think it's important to emphasize that we need to emphasize the rule of law. And after we impeach President Trump, any vice president that becomes president after an impeachment would have to be on extra guard to stick to the Constitution. And while it is true that there are some policies that people might not like that a President Pence might pursue more effectively than President Trump, we can't give up on the rule of law and the Constitution just because we're worried that the person who succeeds a president who's in such gross violation might accomplish some of his priorities more efficiently. And the last thing I would say is, and while this is not part of our impeachment call, I think President Trump is at real risk because of his volatility of starting a war that President Pence might not. I don't think President Pence would have as much of a likelihood to start a nuclear war because someone offended him on Twitter as Donald Trump might.
And of course, if Pence also is impeached, we would be looking at a President Paul Ryan. Very interesting to say. I mean, for me, I feel, Ron, that the idea of impeachment is important when it comes to Trump because it sends a clear message to those who supported him that this kind of a person that they threw their weight behind is not the right kind of person for the job of the White House. That symbolic aspect of it is really important as well. Where can people get organized and find out more? Because ultimately, this isn't the kind of thing that should just be left up to Congress, right?
Right. And in fact, it is being driven by the grassroots. So I would encourage everyone to visit impeachdonaldtrumpnow.org. You can sign up, and then of course you'll get emails, and the emails will be targeted in some cases by the congressional district that you live in, and will tell you next steps that you can take to help move this forward.
Juan, thank you so much for joining us today. Ron, we'll post a link to that website from our site later today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
My guest is Ron Fine, legal director of the group Free Speech for People. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.